Welcome to the Inside College Soccer Podcast, bringing together some of the best college soccer-related people to your earbuds, from coaches to players and beyond. So, thank you for tuning in. The Inside College Soccer Podcast is brought to you by Sports Recruiting USA, the college soccer experts. Now, enjoy the show.
All right, everybody. Well, welcome back. Tallulah, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Hey, thank you for having me. I'm doing pretty well. It's a really, really nice October day over here in West Long Branch. The leaves are orange and I have no complaints.
Right on, right on. If anybody's watching us on YouTube, you can see on the left-hand side of Tallulah, there's a, like, what's that bump on her neck? Now they'll notice it. They didn't notice it before. yeah, you've been through something. Boy, you were starting. Season was going really well at Monmouth, and then you got your collarbone busted, huh?
Yeah, we were, this season's been some up and downs, but we've seen some really good opponents. But yeah, my most recent game I played in, we played Towson. We were up, I think, 2-0 at the time. There was like 11 minutes left, and the girl came in at the top of the box. I went out both my hands just to claim it. And yeah, she got her studs to my collarbone. But honestly, like, it could be a lot worse. Like, she could have gotten like an artery over here. She could have gotten my teeth.
Yeah.
So very grateful that it's just a bone that's broken, but yeah, it kind of stings a little bit.
Yeah. Well, you know what, Tallulah, you've been on my mind a lot lately because, you know, we deal with a lot of clients. You've been a client of ours for 5-6 years now, mm-hmm. something like that. And we can talk about how all that came about, but you're one of my players that I look at for a lot of reasons. Number one, you came in really late to the process. I don't know. I did a post online like in March, what would have been like March of your senior year or February, yeah. And said, I got big time colleges still looking for goalkeepers. And then you reached out. I remember you saying, I want to play at the highest level. You know, I think I'm good enough. And then we did some reaching out and you ended up at Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the thing, I want to talk about some of the ups and downs and we can back up here and go forward. But the reason you've been on my mind is because I see a lot of posts online through hundreds of kids. And of course, the hundreds and thousands of kids that we've dealt with, and some of them just aren't, it feels like resiliency is the word that comes to mind, and persistence is like ebbing away from our society, and yeah. Everybody wants the path of least resistance. And you're a player that didn't take any of that. You took the hardest path you could take, and you have a career filled with some amazing ups and some really crappy downs. And yet here you still are. You know, when we went on right before we started talking, you're like, no, things are good. It couldn't be much better. And you're sitting there with a broken collarbone and, you know, haven't got to play all the minutes that you wanted to play in your career, and you're coming to the end of your career, but yet you still have this amazing outlook on life. And so I wanted to talk about that. And I'm hoping that your story helps some parents and some kids and even, you know, youth coaches that have players going through these rough patches, or college coaches that have players going through rough patches. And I'm hoping everybody can take us something away from this.
Oh, I'd be absolutely honored if they could take even just a little thing from my story. That would be my biggest dream.
Well, let's start at the beginning of the story. Yeah. So you played youth soccer in Virginia, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, coach. I was from Richmond, Virginia. So kind of the big name, the big club there is Richmond Kickers. Didn't go the classic ECNL route like all the girls my age were going. No, there were three other goalkeepers like in my age group that were really good. The current Virginia Tech keeper, she's in her fifth year. Incredible girl, like amazing player. And then a girl that went to Navy. And so I wanted to play. Like, I was like, okay, I know the visibility of the ECNL, like we're going way back. I know the visibility of ECNL is like really good, but at the ripe age of like 12 to 16, I was like, I want to play the soccer. I want to play the game and be with my girls. And so I sacrificed the level. Sacrificed. No, I went and I trained with the guys. I got extra reps. And I kind of dug my heels in for my love of it instead of trying to play the political game of, okay, she's on this ECNL team, so she's going to get this many people at her games. And no, that took a little different path there. So it
And
worked out.
honestly, I admire that, and I try to tell people, and for so many reasons, your story is it doesn't ha there's no one way to do it, right? And do what's right for you, and think of you, and think of what you want for yourself and your career and your pathway, because ECNL is a big financial requirement. Plus, it's from Richmond, you're going to be traveling to California, and you're going to be traveling to Florida, and you're going to be traveling. It's like, when do I have time for other things in life? I mean, there's a lot of reasons why ECNL is excellent for some kids, but it's
Totally.
not the right path for every kid.
Totally. Yeah. And I think it's hard to think about it at such a young age, but just like trying to enjoy playing youth sports is honestly gonna put the love of it in your heart so much to tell you what level you want to take it to. You know? 'Cause I feel like if I don't know, if I played ECNL and I went this like super hardcore route, I might have fallen out of love with it much sooner, you know?
That's good advice. It's something that parents and kids need to keep in mind. And I'm like you. I try to get people to understand who you are as a person. And know thyself, right? Shakespeare said, "Know thyself." And I think it's very an really important piece of advice for all of us is, look, some kids are built for that, and some kids aren't built for that. And your story is so cool because you ended up playing in arguably the top conference in the country. And but didn't take that route. So like, yes, no, it's possible. And the first time I saw your film, I thought, I remember reading your comments, like before I even talked to you, it's like I want to play, at that top level. And I saw your film, oh no, she's capable and somebody's gonna like her and she's gonna be useful. Will she be a starter all 4 years? Probably not. Most aren't. Almost no kids in the country ever at any level are a starter all 4 years, ever. So no matter what position, but will somebody like her? Oh, absolutely. No, you had all the tools. You had the strength and the brave, the brave part, and that you were technical enough and seemed to understand when to come and when to stay and the basic tactics of at least playing the position and could distribute the ball. And you had all the basic tools. I just can try to get people to understand. You got to have those basic tools. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're playing any ECNL. If you don't have those basic tools, then nobody's interested in you, even at the ECNL level. So it doesn't matter where you're playing. It's do you have the tools that the coaches are looking for? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would. I would. And I think in that it's important to just kind of, I mean, everybody knows to get your highlight reel right and, you know, put your best foot forward in that aspect. But I think it's also when you talk to the coaches, like you have to be a human being on the other side of that phone. So just getting comfortable, like speaking with these coaches and looking them in the eyes. And I think your character is a big piece of whether you're going to fit in with a team or not, too. So there's the entire soccer side, which have your ducks in a row there, totally. But the other piece of that I think is being the right human being that a coach is looking for.
Yeah, and while honestly, while that can vary somewhat, I think most coaches all want the same type of person, somebody who's going to be loyal to them, back their decisions, whether they pick you or not, back their decisions, be part of the team, be a teammate, not a me person, right? Think about the team first and what can I do to help the team. And that probably is a good segue into your career, right? To where it started. So, you coming in, and it was probably March or maybe even April when you committed, something like that. It was probably March.
Oh, so I contacted you around March, April, but
Oh God, yeah, it was
my
so late.
commitment, oh, it was so late. So it was March, April of my senior year in high school. I'm about to graduate. And I went on visits, Baylor and Kentucky, and chose Kentucky, and I think I gave the coach a call at on like June 25th or something, super late, like a month
Crazy.
before going there. So that was the most insane turnaround I think ever. But
Yeah, and while we knew it wasn't going to be, and I told you right up front, you aren't going to have a ton of options, but I know some guys that are still looking. And so you ended up at Kentucky, right? You liked Ian, and you were at Kentucky.
There were a lot of things that kind of aligned for me with that school. It's kind of the location was amazing. The level was obviously where I wanted to be. I'd always dreamt of playing in the SEC. So I knew that's kind of where I wanted to go. And the school was there, like the education piece was really good too. So ended up there. We'll get into it, but the ups and downs of those 3.5 years were they were quite interesting, but I wouldn't be who I am today without them. And I mean, I remember giving you calls, I think at least once a semester, being like, "Coach, what am I doing here right now? Like, am I where I need to be? Like, do I need to hit the portal?" But like, and you every time you're just like, you have to make that decision, but I think you stick it out. And I just you could let me know, but I know I came to you many times, and you were just a good consulting voice, good consoling voice, just telling me move with the boat. Don't let it shake you
One of the
out.
conversations I remember very vividly was, you said you wanted this. So do you want it or do you not want it? You said you wanted to play at the highest level in the country. On the women's side, you're not going to get any higher than the SEC. Do you want this or not? And do you believe in yourself or not? Do you think you can do this or not? Do you want to stick this out or not? If you don't want to, plenty of a billion D2, every D2 school in the country would have jumped at you in 2 seconds flat. And half of, anybody outside of the ACC or SEC would have jumped at you in 2 seconds flat at the Division I level. So it wasn't like I knew that you didn't have choices, because I was still watching. I remember your sophomore year, you had a great year, and I watched almost every game. And were playing well. It wasn't like you were making mistakes that was costing your team games over and over again, and ball wasn't going through your legs and your hands and stupid stuff. It was nothing like that. So, no, she can play. I wasn't wrong. She can play. And I think the fact that no coach ever cut you, because you went through some coaching changes at Kentucky, but nobody ever told you, get out of here. You don't belong at this level. You can't play here. Nope, that never happened.
No, and I think that's that's so right. That's so true. Like the just you like this is what you signed up for. It was just like a reality check from an external source of like, you know what? Yeah, this may be like physically and mentally the hardest thing I'm going through, but it's what I wanted. And I just don't think at my young age, I don't know if this is probably my freshman fall or freshman spring when I'm just like overwhelmed with what's going on. And you're like, no, this is how it was always going to be. there's nothing much that can really prepare you. And I think like as a captain this year on my team here at Monmouth, oh, the freshmen. It's the same every year. They're just like overwhelmed with what is going on, and they're like, "Wait, I thought I was going to start and play 90 and be this all-star and be this freshman of the year." And no, instead they are, waiting their turn. We're trying to tell them to be patient and try to learn and be disciplined and be humble. But it's a lot to take in, like as a 17-year-old who, I mean, and I freshly committed, so I was like, oh, they really want me. I was a good addition, but I had a lot of learning to do, a lot of learning to do.
Yeah, what do you think the biggest hurdle was that you had to get over? That what do you think, you know, what rise in the mountain looked like the highest to you as you look back on your career now? You said, "Oh, I wish I had known this. I could have done better." Was there anything like that, or did you just have to go through the fire to become forged and hardened?
I do think there's a bit of forging to be done. I mean, just to use those words, I really love them. Like, you're really gonna grow as a person in so many different aspects playing at whatever level of college soccer you choose. Like, there's a lot of learning to do on the soccer side and learning how to be tougher, faster, more physical. But the mental piece of you're gonna make mistakes, like I think that was my biggest hurdle was, okay, I'm here. I have to be perfect. I have to do this right and this right and this right. When I had that mindset, honestly, it hurt me way more because then when I would make a mistake, my response was like I buried my head in the sand and I was ashamed and embarrassed versus now I make a mistake. Okay, how do I learn from it? How do I do the same thing again and not make that same mistake? How
There
can
you
I
go.
turn it on its head and take it as a learning experience? Or if it's a silly mistake, laugh at yourself and know that that's not who you are. That's not the player that you are. I think a lot, like the biggest hurdle was definitely that mental frame of switching your point of view of your mistakes on the field.
Right.
It lets you play more free, you know, coach.
I love that. No, it's so mature, and it's exactly how I think it should be. And I think in all my conversations with Dan Abrahams, the famous sports psychologist, he talks about this a lot. And it's like you're human, you're going to make mistakes. What you can't let happen is what he calls those ants, automatic negative thoughts that start creeping your head. Oh, what if I do this? And what if you do? It's like those things haven't happened yet. The most important play for any player, but I think especially for a goalkeeper, most important play is the next play. And it drives me nuts when I see field players do it, but it makes me, as a goalkeeper and a goalkeeper coach, makes me doubly nuts when a goalkeeper, like, you just took yourself out of the game. Now you're going to give up a second and third goal. You're going to make a second and third mistake because you made one mistake. That makes no sense, right? Yeah, no, there's so much at that level. So your freshman year, what, you got zero PT if I remember correctly?
No, he actually, and this is
Did you
where it
play a
gets a
little bit?
little tough. He played me against EKU. I think I may have gotten like 5, 10 minutes at the end of the match, and we were up like 7-0. I probably should have thought about it more and redshirted.
Yeah.
But you know, where I am today, I really don't take back any decisions. I just think, you know, if somebody was in my shoes, that might have been a good thought to have, you know.
Right. Yeah. And it's hard to tell a coach, you know, you're sitting on the bench, you don't know how the season's going to go. A coach calls your number, you say, "Yes, coach, I'm doing whatever you tell me to do." That's a hard conversation to have with a coach. I know personally, I would bring players in like 5, 6 games into the season if they haven't played yet and we're starting conference and I don't think they're going to play. I say, well, do you want a red shirt? But not every coach do. And it's hard to do with the goalkeeper because you could be four deep, and then three goalkeepers could get a broken collarbone. And now you need a number one. So it's really hard with the goalkeeper to have a conversation when you don't know, you know, you how fast a career changes because of an injury.
Totally.
You don't
No,
know.
totally. You don't. There's only four of us.
So I remember we have the conversation at the end of the freshman year, and then you decide, no, I'm going to stick it out. I'm going to go in my sophomore year, and it's different, isn't it?
Yeah, it was. We started the season and yeah, I earned the starting spot, which, you know, Not an easy thing to do at SEC school. So I don't even know if I really took the time to soak it in that that was me realizing my childhood dream. But it was a really, really cool experience that year. Really, really cool experience.
Yeah, what do you think anything changed? Had anything clicked over summer or between spring and summer before you checked in your sophomore year? Do you think was there a mental change, or were you just riding the wave?
I do think it was a more mental change of just kind of me maturing a little bit in that headspace, which, as you know, as a goalkeeper and a coach, like if a goalkeeper's headspace is off, it's a really rough time to get them where they need to be and have success. And so I took a lot of time that summer to kind of like focus myself. Mentally, I know I spent some time with the Keeper Institute up here in New Jersey with Jill Lloyden, and like they do a good bit of studying the mental game as well as the technical and tactical aspects. So I think it was that it was a little bit more confidence in myself, kind of regardless of what other people think, because at the end of the day, you just have to believe in yourself, like. Nobody can be a bigger advocate for you other than you. So, I think a little bit of confidence, maybe a little bit of cockiness. Just even when I do mis make mistakes, it was just like, okay, fine, but I'm still gonna go out and do this thing. Like, I think there was a little bit of shift there.
So we get through your sophomore year, and how the what changes happened between your sophomore and junior year? How do you think things shifted?
So to be completely honest, our coach was not too pleased with our season's performance, which that's a coach's right. I can't fault him for that. We didn't do the best. My numbers definitely could have looked better. I'm not too proud to admit it. But so he brought in a transfer goalkeeper from UNC. And that was kind of just like an eye-opener of me saying, all right, coach wasn't happy with me there. I'm gonna have to work my tail off if I'm even gonna want to prove that I can continue to fight and have a spot on this team. So in the spring, worked my tail off, competed with this girl who had played at the school that had been in the championship game the fall before, like, so she had been in the championship team in 2022. And so I'm over here, like, okay, I've got some tough competition in front of me. So yeah, but she was, I mean, she's turned out to be one of my best friends. I kid you not. Like, I keep calling her while I'm over here. She's still in Lexington. Honestly, he made a great choice, because if he hadn't picked her up, I wouldn't be friends with her, and that would be a mistake because I love her so
Wow.
much. But I did learn a lot from her. We competed, we butted heads, we worked our tails off. Like, blood was probably spilled, tears were shed, like you know the deal. But I worked so hard, and she helped me grow so much, that all I wanted to do was support her. And then in that fall of my junior year, just before we go into preseason, it's like maybe mid to late July, I tear my ACL. Doing nothing out of the sorts. Coach, when I tell you, I don't even know if I told you how I'd done it. I went up for a high ball. Do you see that arm movement? Wow, that's progress right there. I went up for a high ball, and I come back down. I plant my right foot behind me so that I can throw the ball out to my left. As I plant my foot, my knee just kind of goes inward, and then I like fall to the ground. I go to hold it, and the coach is like, "I think you're okay." I'm like, Okay. I went and we went to lift, and then I try to like turn the corner around the weight rack, and I just kind of fall to the ground. I'm like, no, something's not right.
Wow.
But so that was my junior season. It was ACL surgery in August, and anybody who's done it knows that grueling recovery process. But a lot is to be said about how I grew even more in my mental state and my emotional state during that time. Like, I'm not recommending anybody get injured ever. It's not great. But again, I'll say it over and over again, like, I wouldn't be who I am without all of the experiences I've gone through. So, yeah, that was junior year.
So, it's always the good news, bad news. The good news is if you're going to tear your ACL, might as well do it at the beginning of the season rather than halfway through the season so that you miss part of 2 seasons. So at least you're able to come back in your senior year.
Yeah, this is true. The timing was unfortunate, but fortunate at the same time. Yeah.
I mean, there's no good time to tear your ACL.
No.
All right, so senior year, how take us there.
Okay. Yeah. So going into senior fall, my sort of plan at this point in time was that I was going to transfer. But I'd already been at Kentucky for 3 years, and I had taken 2 summer courses over the summer to be able to graduate after the fall semester, so in December. And my coach knew this. He knew this. I mean, I had been upfront with him the entire time. Our keeper at Kentucky had another year of eligibility. She was likely going to play. My maturity in this sport and in college athletics and the game of it all at this point is pretty spot on. Like, I know what's kind of going on. I know who he's looking at to play. I know the rotation of spring season is like where you work and you try and prove. And then in the preseason and in fall, he's got it. And so I'd prepared myself. I said, okay, I'm able to graduate in December. I don't play this fall. I redshirt it and I get 2 years of eligibility in the transfer portal at a school where I can continue to live out my dream and play college athletics. And
Yeah.
my senior fall, I had an amazing time. There was a freshman goalkeeper there. She's transferred out now, but she was a joy to be around. She grew from all of us old heads, I like to call us. We're all grandmas. There was a grad transfer. There was the grad transfer from UC, and then there was me, a senior, and then this freshman one, made of rubber. And then the three of us are over here stretching for 30 minutes, like, what are you doing? So
That's great.
I had a great fall with those girls. At GKU, you have a strong unit of goalkeepers. There's not much that can bring you down. So that was, graduated in 3.5 from UK. More so for the timing of being at my transfer school, being here at Monmouth for the spring, I thought was pretty important. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think I so it was such a mature plan that you were able to figure out, and I just love the way you handled it, because it is a story of, had you left UK, your freshman year just because it was hard and you wanted to go easier, I don't think you're at Monmouth. I'm not sure that your career goes the same way.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. And I don't think I would reach the full potential of me in this spot that I would want to see,
Yeah, and the other thing that I thought was really cool about your career, you and I started having a discussion when the NCAA was going through the They had already decided that, you know, that the courts had decided that the House versus NCAA settlement was going in the favor of the athletes, and the NCAA was trying to figure out what this was going to look like. And you got yourself into a unique position at that time, didn't you? Yeah, tell us about that.
This is so cool. I was heavily involved with SAC, which anybody at any D1 institution, I believe, I mean, probably all three levels, D1, D2, D3, I think have SAC, which is Student Athlete Advisory Committee. And through my time at UK, I was able to, I think I started it in my sophomore year. I made my way up to be president of UK SAC. And with that opportunity came different opportunities to go out and be a part of the SEC Student Athlete Advisory Committee. And then from there, we would go and we would meet down at the SEC headquarters down in Birmingham, Alabama. And we would meet and we would talk about ongoings with all of these things. You're talking the house settlement, you're talking roster caps, revenue sharing, you're talking anything that involves a student athlete and is impacting them. I mean, we would talk about health protocols going on, concussion protocols. They were the conversations that I was a part of and the people in the rooms that I was in. Experiences that I'm so grateful that I stuck it out because I built those relationships. You know, if say I transferred and I wasn't happy there, I transferred. You don't build those connections, you don't have those
Right.
experiences. And then I man it somehow, coach. I don't know why they voted me to be vice chair of SEC SAC. We're sitting there filling out this Google form, and they're like, Tallulah Miller, congr-, and I was like, guys, I said like two things in the meeting. I didn't really, but then they took us down. I remember the chair was Barry Evans. He was a thrower at Bama. They brought us down to, oh, what part of Florida is that? It's not Pensacola. It might be Pensacola. That's where the tournament is. I don't think it's Pensacola. But they brought us down to Florida for the SEC meetings. And in those meetings, it was like eight athletes from the SEC talking all these big wigs about what we're seeing on the ground level. And it just opened my eyes to like how seriously they take the opinions of student athletes. Experience is super cool. People I've met that I'm in touch with now, I would have never met. What I mean, just incredible.
So proud of you, man. And I remember reaching out to you. It's like, what do you think's gonna happen? We were all speculating what's gonna happen and all of that. So what's your now that that's kind of behind us? I mean, we're still going through changes, and it'll be small changes or medium-sized changes here and there over the next few years. We still don't know how all this is gonna shake out. But what's your opinion of the direction that you see college athletics going, and then specifically as it relates to soccer?
I
The big
think
question. I know it's
it's a
really
big
wide
one. Yeah,
open.
there's a million different things, different paths we could go down with this, but I think
So, what's your overall impression about, let's start with revenue sharing. What's your overall impression with revenue sharing?
So I think it's a better format than what the prior NIL format has been. At least, I mean, this, and we're talking about like football and basketball here,
Right.
because before these rules of NIL have been cracked down, these teams would be able to get like insane amounts of money just from donors to give to these players because of their name, image, and likeness. And it's pretty much whoever had the most money might get the best player, right? And to an extent, it's still going to work like that. But I just think they have a little bit more of a tight leash on it now. with revenue sharing being capped, I think, what is it? For the bigger schools, it's what, 20 million, I think, a year at most. At least that's the figure we were talking about.
Yeah,
And
no,
then,
I think that's about right. Yeah.
okay. And then it's not really going to be great for your Olympic sports. It's mainly going to benefit those big revenue drivers. So you think football, basketball, women's basketball, maybe, you know.
Right.
And I think they're not going to go based on equality. They're going to go equity. So when we were having these discussions, it was 85% of that 20 million is going to go to football, 10% to basketball, 2.5% to women's basketball. And then what are we left with? Two and a half
Right.
percent to the rest of the
Right.
sports total. Is it
Right.
there's there really a point of that? Like,
Right. It's kind
so
of what I guessed at the beginning is that, look, I don't think it's going to affect women's soccer and men's soccer greatly. And, I know Texas has two, maybe three girls on 100,000, which is pretty impressive for one school and very impressive for women's soccer.
yeah.
And, I know a couple of guys' deals, one or two guys' deals that are on that. And then after that, the biggest deals are like, every player on the Indiana men's roster, all 28 are on full rides, like
Yeah.
everything, nothing. And that's like, well, okay, well, that's a lot more money than was being spent. So
Yeah.
I think generally it's helped players, but, and then people don't understand, but, now when we get down to the Monmouths of the world or the St. Francis's of the world or whatever, it's like, no, there's no money there. I mean, Monmouth has a great basketball program. I'm sure the guys, get some little more in that area, but like not Monmouth's not known for winning, a football, Division One championships. It's not gonna happen. So it doesn't affect the mid-majors
No.
like it affects the big schools, right?
No, it doesn't. But the roster cuts, those do affect your mid majors. I think I remember us
A
talking about
lot.
that. That's a big trickle down and big domino effect, which personally I think is going to bring the level of D1 soccer. It's going to even the playing field out because these girls that were going to play on these top teams that were going to be like the maybe the second string, maybe the third string, they're going to start going down to your mid majors. And those girls can be all stars on mid majors.
Well, that's a really good way to look at it. I'm honestly, I don't know that I had thought about it that way, but yeah, if you're second string at North Carolina, then you end up at a mid-major, that strengthens the mid-majors. Yeah, it's a good way to look at it.
I think it's gonna make it more competitive. I mean, I think even this year, looking at some of these scores of these games, I'm like, wow, some of these smaller teams out of conference are putting up a fight against your bigger known teams, and I enjoy seeing it. I mean, now that I'm a part of the mid-major tribe, I'm like, yeah, let's give those top dogs a run for their money. Like, I'm all for making that NCAA tournament more of an underdog story. But yeah, and those roster caps too are gonna, I think, at least disperse a little bit more of the scholarship money that's allocated further across the teams. So
Yeah, and it's just so it depends on depends on your state and
yeah.
the state of your state financially right now. Like in California, we're going through there's a mass exodus happening in California of corporations and individuals going to other states,
Yeah.
and that's driving down the tax rolls. And what's happening is our state schools are coming under a crunch. So, you may not see this affecting, the Cal State Northridges of the world in a positive way. It may go the opposite way because we may see in the next couple of years some decreased revenue. And I know there's other states that are struggling, and then there's states like Texas that are, booming right now because everybody's moving in Florida that people are moving to. And then those state schools are going to get, a bump in the next couple of years of tax revenue, which could increase that. So I think it depends on the state of your state and the state schools. Private schools are different. I mean, I don't know that, Notre Dame will ever struggle because it's a popular school to go to, and Stanford and, some of the private schools, it may not affect them like it will affect the state school system in certain states. And then other state schools are doing well. Like I said, depends on the state you're in. So, so many changes. I said to Lula, I said to somebody the other day that, I've been in this for 33 years, 34 years in the college game. I've seen more changes in the last 3 years than there have been in the last 30 years prior. And we're still not done. I know we're not done. We had the white paper that just came out, which I don't think will ever happen. I mean, I think it's all pie in the sky. The idea of a full, a full season going, throughout the entire school year on the men's side. I don't think the women want it. I don't think the women's coach, well, not women don't want it. Women's coaches in general don't want it. So I don't think that that's going to happen, but I don't know. Who knows?
It would
Who
be
knows?
interesting. I mean, it would change your entire layout of the year because I feel like with soccer, like they just have. It's like a clock of just like when they get things done for the next season of the year, you know? So it's
It would definitely
it
change recruiting. I mean, people don't understand
yeah.
how much harder recruiting is going to be in the spring. And our very first episode of Inside College Soccer, we brought in Bobby Clark, who they call him the Godfather of soccer, him and Jerry Yeagley. But Bobby, was at Stanford and at Notre Dame, and of course his son's at Washington now. And Bobby said that he really enjoyed the spring because it allowed, as you described earlier, it allows you to really work with players that you just don't have time to work with in your season. The person who's number 28, 29, 30, and now today's, 25, 26, 27, 28, you don't have time. Not that you don't want to have time for them, you just don't have time to. It's like, oh, lace it here and work on bending it there, and this is what I need you to do here. You don't have to. But in the spring, that's when you can take some of that technical time, that tactical time, trying to raise the level of your bottom players to help them, hopefully impact the team the next year. Imagine if that goes away, if you never have that opportunity.
I think you see a lot more transferring.
Yeah, because players will
It's
now you don't even get to play in the spring. Now you don't even get that little moment of hope or glimmer of,
exactly.
oh, maybe I'm wrong. I mean, maybe playing once a week gives you one day or so a week that you can begin to work with those players, but it's the problem that people don't understand as a starter, you get it for sure, and coaches get it. The pressure of having to win, and especially at the competitive level, the SEC level, the ACC level, the Power Four level, and even the mid-majors that are trying to win their conference every year, and they're right close. And the pressure of having to win never releases in the season. It never goes away. It's not like, oh, we got an easy week this week. No, there are no easy weeks.
No. And we can see like you see the amount of time and attention that the coaches put into like reviewing the other teams. And you have to think about like they're watching somebody else's 90-minute game so that we can maybe do something in like 3 minutes of a single play to take advantage of, it's the intricacies of how coaches have to put that stuff together, I think can get overlooked sometimes by us players, but they spend a lot of time on that, a lot of time on how we're going to implement it in training, putting the pieces together. I have a lot of respect for it. I'll say that.
Yeah, it is. It's more than people realize. People look at, you're so lucky. I remember people telling me, it was a coach, you get to go to practice 2, 3 hours a day and then you're done. It's like, oh no, you don't understand. This is a 12. And then, for the coaches who really love their kids too, it's like, oh no, I'm in the hospital with this kid, and I'm, this kid's sick, and I gotta call their parents, and it's like, no, it just never stops.
Oh no.
So one of the other things that you're doing that's really cool that I wanted to talk about, because I think what it's really, really important for a lot of kids, and I think they get through their entire college career and never even consider that. And it's your new internship. Tell us about that, how that came about, what it's about, why it's important to you. Tell us about that.
I landed an internship with a company based out of New York City, Big Apple. And it's nice because my proximity to there is 30-minute ferry ride. So oh man, my commute is beautiful. I drive up Beach Road over here, and I park. I walk 2 minutes to get on the boat, sit on the boat, and then the boat spits me out on Wall Street. And then I walk like 2 minutes down to my office. And I'm like, here to work. It's incredible. I've only been up there once, but so I'm using my degree. I'm using some of the free time I have as a master's student. I'm really not that busy. Like I have two night classes a week and then one online class and then practice 3 hours a day. And then the rest of the day I'm over here like twiddling my thumb. So I'm like, how can I put my two business degrees and working towards an MBA, how can I put that to work? And so I was, I don't sit still very well. So I was looking through our career development office sends out a ton of like email just of like who's looking for, fall interns, spring interns. And I think we got back from our Bucknell trip at like 2 a.m. the night before. And the next morning I was in the grad office like studying for something. I see the email and I'm just kind of like on autopilot, like apply. And then I get an email back. And I'm like, oh, okay. I landed that, which, I've
So
applied to
what do they
so
do? Who's the company? Give them a plug. Who are they? What do
many.
they do?
It's Quint Financial Technologies. So let's see if I can nail my 30-second pitch here. No, the company, they sell finance solutions to banks and credit unions to kind of make the processes of the bank more efficient. And so what this means is it takes the mundane tasks away from their big important employees and gives it to somebody else who is very well trained and can make it happen more efficiently. So
Okay.
what I'm learning is sales and business development. And I think all things that are going to keep my feet on the right path to my early career. So very excited.
Right on. I know you haven't been at it very long, a month or so.
This is
Not
week, this is week three, but last week I was
week
pretty
three.
inebriated with the broken bone. So
Right.
count this week two.
Right. Yeah, no, I was so excited to see your post, and I'm excited to follow how that goes for you. And but I think it's really important that student athletes realize that there's going to be an end to their careers at some point. And I think that internships are just a fantastic way to get some real world experience.
Oh yeah. And I think the other piece of that is really, I mean, these companies love hearing about what you're learning as an athlete. Like so many of the soft skills that I was talking about are coming from, oh yeah, I learned this leadership skill by being a soccer player. I learned resilience. I learned how to not let things affect me mentally. Like I may be learning more from soccer than from my education, but at least I'm learning.
No, that's such a good point. I kind of feel the same way too. I feel like soccer is an application of learning as opposed to sitting in a classroom and books you don't ever get to apply and the lectures you don't ever get to apply. But soccer, you get to apply it on a daily basis. So it feels like it gives you a head start, right? That's why it's so important. It drives me nuts if you, I don't think you're in our groups. We've got a couple of Facebook groups that have And one's got like 16, 17,000 parents in it, and the other one's got about 13,000 parents in it, and it's all advice. And when we talk about, some of the things that we talked about today, or we talk about questions come up with scholarships and stuff, and people downplay the importance of college soccer. So, and getting that education and be able to combine it
Oh, yeah.
with what your passion is, as opposed to professional soccer, which is now my career is only soccer, that's it. And as opposed to just being a student, it's such a unique thing that we have in America, that virtually almost Canada has a version of it, but we're the most unique offerings of all levels of institutions in the world. And with the amount of offerings that, the amount of
Oh,
options that kids have, there's nothing like the US college sports system.
no, yeah, we're very, very fortunate. I think, yeah, having soccer to couple with my education in my undergrad, in my master's is just like I'm seeing connections from the content that I'm learning in class to what I'm doing in sport. And all of the different roles I'm taking within my team and what I took within my team at UK, like it's insane. It's really, really cool.
Well, Tallulah, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to do this. I know you are busy, and I know you still attend to what the team, needs of you. And as a captain, I know you'll be there for them. This is probably it for this season, unfortunately, or will you make it back by the end of the season?
I wake up every morning and I try to get in my set position and then it hurts a little bit and I'm like, okay, maybe not yet. I'd like to think I can try to make a comeback before playoffs, but the doctors have said otherwise.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been a sad reality that I haven't been able to play in a postseason just yet. But it makes me even more hungry for next season because I have that one.
Next season, spring and next season,
Oh yeah.
we'll follow you, and we'll expect you to lead the team into the NCAAs. No pressure.
Oh yeah. No, I got it. I got it.
Right. Well, thanks, Tallulah. And maybe after you graduate and are off, maybe we'll do this again, and we'll do a recap of how it all wrapped up, because you've been a great guest on the podcast, and I know this is going to help some parents and players, and I really appreciate you coming on. Thank you.
Well, coach, I appreciate you. It's been an honor. Thank you so much.
All right, thanks.
Have a good
All right, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that episode with Tallulah. She's an amazing young lady. And just an example of what a student athlete should be. Yes, as you get ready to go into, for those of you that are trying to navigate this recruiting journey, you can see that how difficult it can be for a young freshman coming out, because they're dealing with grad students like Tallulah, and you heard her story, dealing with transfers from North Carolina. And it's difficult for a freshman to be able to compete with players like that. One of the things that can help, however, is a gap year. So I encourage everybody that's thinking about wanting to learn more about a gap year to go to our website that we've set up specifically for gap years, called gapyearsoccer.com. So if you go there, you'll be able to read a little bit about gap years, what they are, the opportunities that we have are specifically in England, in Germany, and in Spain. So if you're interested in learning more about a gap year, go to gapyearsoccer.com, fill out an application. One of our staff will be in touch with you, and we can get on the phone and figure out, what opportunities that we have maybe to present to you that might be a good fit to help a player mature, give them time to mature, physically, athletically, technically, tactically, in another country, while they're waiting their turn to become 19 or 20, and mature a little bit and maybe then be able to impact the college level a little bit better. So go to gapyearsoccer.com, fill out an application, and one of our staff will be in touch. Have a good day.